I'll tell you a story. When I was in college, there came a point in my life in college where I began to fall apart. There was a point in my college career where I started just not doing well. I was away from my home church, and that was a community. My home church was important to me. And when I left that, I felt its absence. I didn't have my pastor or my youth pastor. I was on my own. The Bible says, what does it say? A child left to themselves brings their mother to shame. And I was that child. So I had no church family. I was away from my blood family, my mama, my brothers. And so I was apart from my community, and I was doing badly. Emotionally, relationally, I was doing badly. My grades start slipping. My attitude starts falling. I stop like showering. I'm just slowly falling apart. I had this one professor who noticed. And this professor, now usually in college, your prof either passes you or fails you, right? That's what profs do. If you don't do the work, they crush you. If you do the work, they give you an A. That's what happens. This prof, I don't know why he chose to care about me. And one day he invited me to his house for dinner, which freaked me out. Because in my mind, the prof was something like, you were the teacher, I was a student, and we don't talk outside the classroom. If I see you outside, that's weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're separate people. But he invited me to his house for a meal. And so I went. I took a bus out to the suburbs, went to his house, and his wife was a real German lady, like born in Germany, spoke German. And we had lunch, and apparently Europeans eat soup for meals. You ever heard of this? Like, not for a beginning thing, but the actual meal is soup. So she gave me this green soup, and it was green, which already is like, I don't eat green things, generally as a rule. Which actually is true. That's a bad rule to have. But they gave me this green soup, and it was cold, too. It was cold green soup. And I waited for the next course to come, and it never came, because this was the main dish. But we ate on this table, and she made this cold soup, and we ate and we talked. I remember leaving there just feeling so cared about. And the next day, I saw him at class. He saw me. After class, he told me to wait for a second, and I'm like, what's up? And he said, come here. So I come over, and it sounds weird, but it's not weird. It's actually kind of beautiful. I come over, and he gives me a hug. He says, Ernesto, I want you to know I love you. And I didn't hug him back because I'm an awkward person. And I was like, all weird about it. I'm like, thanks, man. And I just left. But in my heart, I needed it so bad. And every single class I went to, he'd give me a hug and tell me he loved me. And every few weeks, he'd invite me to his house for dinner. I got to know him and his wife and his child. And being brought into his house, I began to just feel like someone gave a rip. Someone I was falling off the earth, and someone cared to reach out, and they brought me into their world, into their life, into their house, broke bread with me. And it meant the world to my soul. In Luke chapter 19, we see one of many stories with Jesus having a meal with someone. Because this is Jesus' style. If you read the Gospel of Luke, just read the one book of Luke. He's either going to someone's house to eat, having a meal, or leaving a meal the entire book. And this is one meal he has. Listen to what happens. So he enters Jericho. He's passing through. And behold, there's a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. Okay, so Zacchaeus is a tax collector, which means he worked for Rome. He's a Jewish man who works for the enemy. And he collects taxes for Rome. But the way he makes his money, let's say Rome says, I want 2 denarii per person. If I charge you 4 denarii per person, I make $2 from my own pocket. So the crueler I am, the meaner I am, the more greedy I am, the more money I can make. But guess what? Everybody hates these guys. The Jews hate, because these tax collectors, not only did they rob their fellow man, but they were traitors to their nation. They had sided with Rome. So they had money, but they had no one to eat with and no one to talk with because they were pariah, exiles, untouchable, if you will. Zacchaeus, this rich man with no friends, hears that Christ is coming, and he wants to see Christ because Christ is kind of a big deal. Jesus is all talked about by a lot of people, so Christ is coming, and Zacchaeus is a short guy. He's short. It happens, you know? What are you going to do? And Zacchaeus can't see past the crowds, climbs a tree. So when Christ comes, he'll see him, and he'll be able to say, I saw Jesus, dude. Now, you ever seen someone famous? It's pretty cool, right? I was in Rome once, which is kind of cool, and I saw the Pope. And that was kind of cool. Like, everyone, like, ran over, and I didn't say hi to the guy, didn't give the guy a high five, nothing. I just saw the dude, and I was like, you saw the Pope? Like, it's just a weird thing seeing someone famous, right? Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus from afar, and that's all he wanted. But as Christ was walking, he walks under that tree, and he stops, and he looks up like, dude, come on down here. I'm going to your house for lunch. So the guy comes down, and he's pumped, and Christ comes to his house for lunch. He's up next. So he hurries and comes down, receives him joyfully, and when the leaders saw it, they all grumbled. They said, he has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. See, back in the day, in a lot of cultures, eating with someone was saying, I approve of this person's life. I break bread with them. They are my equal. They are in good standing before the Lord. Breaking bread with people is a huge deal back in the day. And the Jewish elite, the priests, the Pharisees, the religious, they would not break bread with sinners. Not with Gentiles, not with tax collectors, none of them. But Christ goes to this sinner's house and breaks bread. Why does he do this? Why does Christ take so many hits sitting down to eat with people that no one else likes? Here's the deal. This is week 3 of a new series called Bless Your Neighbor. And our whole goal as a people, we want to be for Jesus and for Flint. We want to bring our Savior to our city, and we don't know how to do that. How do I take the God I love? How do I take the teachings of Christ that have changed my entire life and give it to somebody else? I can't do it on Facebook, because everyone's just throwing apples at one another on Facebook, right? Or throwing eggs, I should say. How do I bring my love for Christ to people I know that are far from God? And our answer is, if we want to help people who are far from God get near to God, if we want to be for Jesus and for Flint, we must bless our neighbor. We must bless our neighbors. And how do we do that? First, we must bow our head and pray for those who are far from God. I challenge you all to pray, to bow your head if you have someone in your life, a spouse, a sibling, a parent, a child who is far from God. I said, start praying for them. Bow your head for them every single day. And bring their name before God's feet and say, God, this person I love is far from you. Please draw them to yourself. How do we bless our neighbors? First, we bow. Then, we listen. If we're going to reach America, if we're going to reach Flint for Christ, we got to shut up a little bit. We got to. As Christians, we're always talking at people and never listening to people. We talk so much and listen so little, we don't know where the world is at. We don't know what they need or how to talk to them. And so we said last week, we must listen to people. Listening to people is loving them. When you listen to someone's story, you bless them. And today, our third step to blessing our neighbor, eat with your neighbor. If you want to bless your neighbor, eat with them. Some of you, this is the best sermon of your life. I'm telling you to eat food. Okay, some of you are like, amen to eating food. I like food too. But for Jesus, food is more than just tasting good. For Jesus, food is mission. Okay, listen to what, at the end of this verse, Zacchaeus gets saved. Jesus says about Zacchaeus, he says in verse 9, and Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house. Christ goes and eats with this guy who everyone calls a sinner. Everyone says, this guy's on the outside. This guy's a punk, a traitor. He is someone I refuse to love. And Christ ate with him. And Christ welcomed, Christ came to his table and broke bread. And this guy gets saved. And Christ says, this is what I'm here for. He goes, the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. There are three verses that say why Christ came. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And the third verse says in Luke 7:34, and the Son of Man came eating and drinking. One of his big strategies for seeking and saving lost people is breaking bread with them. Jesus Christ spends so much time eating with sinners. He had so many meals with so many people. One of the rumors about him was that he was a wine bibber and a glutton. That's King James English. They said he eats too much and he drinks too much. Why do they say that? Because he's always at people's houses eating food, which is a pretty awesome life. But Christ literally would go to new towns and go to the homes of people that everyone else didn't talk to. Talking people who are in the sex trade. Traitors to the nation. He's going to people that have been pushed away from common decency, and he is welcoming them into his presence and sharing food and sharing time with them. This is part of Christ's strategy for reaching people. He took time to sit and eat with them. Because when you eat with someone, you have community with them. When you eat with someone, you share life. So, the truth today is very simple. If you want to bless your neighbor, you must eat with them. This is your third step. You have bowed your head in prayer for them. You're praying for by name. Lord, I'm praying for them. I'm praying for them. I'm praying for them. Then you listen. You hear the story. You hear their story. And then comes this next step, is to break bread with people. So how do we do this? How do we break bread with people who are far from God? We get real practical today. First, we must regain our table. We must regain our tables as a place of community. For most of us, we do not eat with people anymore, do we? We're Americans. In the 50s, they created a thing called the TV dinner. And you know what you did with that dinner? You ate it in front of the TV. And not only that, you stopped cooking, which is crazy. And so they say since like 1960, they say 2/3 of American families don't have a single meal around a table together. 2/3 of American families that live in the same house do not eat together. It's a value we cease to have. In my home, we used to often get our plates and our drinks, go to the living room, turn on TV, and watch TV and eat our dinner. You ever do that? What do they call those TV trays? I eat my tray and watch TV, and all of us four people that are family look this way instead of at each other and eat our food. We've instituted recently a new rule. We eat our meals together, which the kids today loved it at first, let me tell you. Let's watch TV instead. And our kitchen, the sun comes right in the door during dinner, right in the window. So like the people that are bashed to the windows are all hot because the sun's coming in. We started eating around the table every night for dinner. I'm telling you, those around the table meals are when I probably talk to my kids the most in a day. About school. About feelings. They ask crazy questions. Just crazy, sometimes the most nonsensical questions in the world, but we're talking about life. And we're all stopping. No phones. If I put my phone on the table now, my daughter like, Ernesto, she goes, Ernesto, Dad, no phone. Dad, and you know what? When she does it, it annoys me. I'm like, you're my daughter, not my mom. But she's right. She's right. I told her this. I told her no phones, no toys at the table. It's family time. So I put my phone out. Lena's like, Dad, you said no phone. And I'm like, you're right. And I put it away. And that family time, we have begun to reclaim our table as a place of community. Many of you need to reclaim your table as a place of community. Hospitality is a powerful tool in the toolbox of reaching people for the Lord. Now, I mentioned TV dinners. Well, what if you can't cook? I'm saying share a table. You're like, man, I can share a table, but there's no food on it. Look, I appreciate what you're saying. I grew up in a Mexican home, which means that it was an awesome life. No, it means for me that every meal was going to a restaurant in my home. Every meal, I'd sit down. My mom would bring me my plate of food. She'd bring me my cup and say, what do you have to drink? I'd tell her, and she'd fill up the cup. It was like going to a restaurant every single meal of my life. And I thought that was a normal life. that's how it was, wasn't it, Tony? But my mom never taught me how to cook. Because I was a dude. And that's Mexican culture. That's how it was. So later in life, I had to teach myself to I can make five dishes really well. Five, babe? Four? Five. But outside those dishes, I can't cook. I've never, ever successfully made a grilled cheese sandwich. Has not happened. It seemed like an easy idea, but it doesn't work when I try. But I learned to cook. Why did I learn to cook? Because I wanted to show my love for people through making food for them. We must regain the table as a place of community. Start that in your own house. Invite people over to your home and just break bread with them. So first, we reclaim the table as a place of community. Second, I want you to start considering inviting people to your home to break bread. This is a scary thing. When you invite someone to your home to break bread, into your world to break bread. Restaurants are easier for a lot of reasons. You can leave when you want. You don't got to do any work. If you invite someone into your house, you know what they'll see? They'll see your actual life. And our lives aren't perfect, are they? Our houses aren't clean. We snap at our kids. Our kids don't behave right. I burnt the stinking toe. If you always invite them to your house, things are going to go wrong. You're letting them see your actual, real, not perfect life. And that's good. It's good. When you let people who are far from God come into your world to see what you really like behind closed doors, they are going to see, even through the imperfection, they're going to see the love of Christ in your home. No matter how imperfect you are, they're going to see, man, Jesus lives here in this unvacuumed, undusted apartment. He lives right here. Inviting people into your house is an awesome thing. It allows you to tell someone, when Dr. McDuffie invited me to his house as a student, he said to me, Ernesto, I want you to come into my life and into my world. I'm going to care about you. And it changed my life. When you invite someone, I'll tell you a story. This is a real story. My first date with Angie, My first date with my wife was a terrible first date. Our first date was horrible. We were both in Chicago. She had a car. I needed a ride home, and she was going my way. So I'm like, I caught a ride with her. So I get in the, so we're getting in the car. I was really sad about something. I was in a real bad mood. So we're getting in the car. I literally tell her, I'm like, listen, Angie, I know we're driving 5 hours together to Michigan, but I'm really sad. Can we just not talk the whole way? That was my opening volley to her. She's like, okay. We get in the car. I have some cassette tapes in a case. It wasn't my car, and I still had my tapes with me because I'm that weird of a person. I had my tapes. I took them out, put a tape in. My tape was called Lonely, Sad, and Depressing Volume 1. Put that tape in the tape player. Listen to the whole thing for 3 hours going to Michigan. And the whole time, guess what I did? I sang at the top of my lungs the whole drive. Turned it up. She doesn't know me very well. I'm just singing random Counting Crows songs. How awesome is that? So it's really awkward. It's really weird. I'm a really selfish person. So we're getting by my mom's house. We get to my house. My mom's not home. So you know what I do? I feel bad for her. She's endured 5 hours of me being weird. So I feel bad. We go in the house, and I make her dinner, didn't I? I make her some, I mean, it's not much of a dinner. It was fish fillets in the oven. You take them out of the freezer, put them in the thing. Corn, I did corn, and maybe something else. I think broccoli, I don't know. But I put on a table, I put on a plate looking nice. I gave it to her, sat down, we ate a meal. After 5 hours of silliness and foolishness, that meal started some wheels turning, yo. Because when you eat together, it's a big deal. When I was my first pastoral duty I ever had, I was a youth pastor at a church called Faith Church of Waterford, and they gave me the weirdest job ever. They asked me to take care of the old person service at 8 a.m. At 8 a.m. in the morning on Sundays, there was the gray-haired church service. It was all hymns. Everyone there was over like 70 years old. They're like, Ernesto, you're 24. You be their pastor. And I'm like, I'm so young. I'm older than their grandbabies. Their great-grand, it was crazy. So I'm like, how do I connect with, how do I begin to make relationships with these people that are so much older than I am? So we started a thing. My wife and I started a group, an event. We called it Dinner at Nesto's. And every Sunday, two families came to our house. We made them dinner every single Sunday. And within 1 year, every gray hair in that church was our best friend. We broke bread together. We ate and shared life. When you meet someone in your world, it is a huge deal to break bread, to share life, to share love. You become people who know one another. I encourage you, if you have a home, invite people into your world and break bread with them. I'll say this to you as well. Number two, I'll say, when you get invited somewhere, go and break bread with people. When you get invited somewhere, listen, every single year at Thanksgiving, I hear everyone complaining about Thanksgiving meal, right? Every year, I gotta go to both families' houses and my family, and it's annoying. Everyone complains at Thanksgiving, right? You complain, I complain, we complain. Christmas time, I got 5 houses to visit because of my so much divorce in my family. Oh, shoot. Like, it's crazy, right? But instead of complaining about birthday parties or family dinners, man, you're being invited as a light bringer of Christ to go into a world and bring Jesus to it. You invite to a birthday party and you go there and everyone's nuts, you are the one bringing Christ into that nuts atmosphere. Getting invited to places, to people's anniversaries or birthdays, whatever they invite you to, you get to go there and be a representative of Jesus Christ. And that's awesome. When we get invited somewhere, Jesus Christ got invited all over the place. And even when they invited him to trap him, he still went. He'd go into their worlds, he'd go into their homes, he'd break bread with them, and it was awesome. When I was in India, The missionary rule, if you don't know this, the missionary rule when you're overseas, and also going to people's houses, if someone invites you to their home and makes you a meal, you got to eat it, just so you know that, okay? You got to eat it. You know this? You go to someone's house, and that lady made me cold green soup. It was all Europeanish instead of Latinish. I didn't like the way it tasted. I slurped it, I smiled, and slurped it again, and ate that whole soup, left nothing. I drank it all. She worked hard on that soup, and I ate that soup. Once, I was in the mountains of Mexico, no joke, and this Nahuatl woman, Nahuatl people are like Mayan ancestry. Mayan or Aztec, babe? Aztec ancestry. So like Mexicans, we are like Aztecs and Spaniards equals awesomeness. That's what we are. But without that Spanish blood, we are a short people. Like Aztecs are small individuals. So you go up in the mountains to the Nahuatl people, and their language has clicks in it. Like, it's crazy. So up in the mountains, I go to this woman's house, and she makes me a meal because she wants to bless me. She wants to love me. You know what she made me? She made me chicken foot soup, which is a broth with chicken feet in it, and that's it. It's a broth with chicken feet floating in it. She poured it in the bowl for me, and I smiled. And I was going around the feet for a while, you know, but eventually, there's feet in the bottom of the bowl. And when I got those feet, they don't chew well. It's like chewing on a bow, you just kind of chew on it. You eventually just gotta swallow it, because you're not chewing it up. But I smiled, and I ate it all, because she was loving me with that dish. When you're invited to someone's world, that's a big deal. Go and love and receive the blessing of that meal with them. It's a huge deal to be invited to someone's life and to break bread with them. Listen, as Americans, we have become more and more isolated. We stay like my garage. My house was built in 1915. Is that right, Andy? 15? 1929. Okay, I was a little off. 1929. My house, because it was built so old, the garage is detached. Do you know why the suburbs began attaching garages? Why did every house you build nowadays, you attach the garage? Why? So you don't have to see your neighbors. You pull in, push the button, the door goes down, you can go to your house and not see anybody. Having a detached garage, I park my car, I walk out, and sometimes the neighbors catch me. And you gotta talk to them. You gotta engage them as human beings. Oh no. But as Americans, when people come to your house, when someone knocks on your door, do you freak out? Who's at my door? Why are you coming to my house? I used to be that way. Now that I'm in Flint Town, knocking the door is always an adventure. Who's at our house today? You know, who's, because people just stop by at our house. They don't call or nothing. Look at you guys. Sorry. But a lot of people do it, and it's awesome. And I do. I enjoy doing it. I'll go to people's houses, just show up and knock on their door, freak people out, and I love it. We have become people that have really, it's just us in our little house or our apartment, and we just stay alone and leave me alone. But we're called by Jesus Christ to engage others, to go out of our comfort zones, to eat food we don't like. When I invite people to my house, I love making food for people because it's me saying, here, I'm loving you with my awesome cooking. And I've blown it. I've had people come to my house, and I've made food, and I've overcooked it. I, 2 years ago here at church, for a small group, I just murdered some ribs, just destroyed, and everyone smiled and ate them, but they were horrible. I'm like, it cost me money and reputation as a rib cook. It was awful. Thanks for eating those ribs, everybody. It happens. Sometimes the meal goes badly. We say we want to reach people for Christ. If you want to reach people for Jesus, you're going to have to let them in your life. We got to stop retreating and hiding. We have to engage one another. We have to be a community. Here's some easy steps to take. First, invite someone you know for dinner. Start easy. I know you. I like you. Let's share a meal. And you eat together and talk. If you don't know how to cook at all, do barbecue because it's hard to mess that up. It's possible, but difficult. Just do, if you're real bad, just do hot dogs. It's really hard to mess those things up because of how they started. Just start. Have someone come in your life. Just eat together. Share some life. All is good in the hood. And then that person you've been praying for who's far from God, maybe you have a neighbor in your house. Invite them over. And you don't got to invite them over and be like, here's a Bible, love Jesus. You don't got to go crazy from day one, okay? Sit down, listen to their story, get to know them. Who are you? Who are your kids? What do you like? How have you been in Flint for? Ask questions and hear the answers. We say we want to reach the city. In order to reach our city, we must let our city into our lives. We have to. Let's open up our lives and open up our hearts to meet people. Now, if you do this, it is inconvenient. If you and your neighbor come to your house for dinner one time, you now are on a first name basis. And you got to say hi every time you see him. And that's okay, because we're doing this for Christ. It's getting to the point in my life where I can't go to Meijer without seeing someone I know. I was afraid of this. I was. When I first moved to the city, no one knew me. I could push my cart and buy lucky charms, and no one cared. And now people say, Pastor Nesto, I'm like, oh, what up? Going out takes longer. And there's moments I want to be annoyed by it and say, I will say this to my shame. I have been tempted to duck behind an aisle when I see someone I know. I'm like, I'm in a hurry. Hi, kids, shut up. But I usually don't do that. I usually say hello to people I know. It's inconvenient to let people into your life. But if we want to reach people, Jesus taught us a powerful way to do it. That's to break bread with each other. Let's say you're here going, man, Pastor, my table's really small. I can't cook. Listen, if you got to cheat, go to a restaurant. At least it's something. It's something. Go to a restaurant, sit down, have them make the meal for you. You're still breaking bread. You're still letting someone into your world. But I just think that the home tables are really powerful. They're really powerful. And if you let someone into your home, into your life, you're saying, I love you and I'm letting you in. And who knows how God can use that to further his story in their life. So how do we bless our neighbors? We bow our head for them. How do we bless our neighbors? We listen to their stories. We listen. Three, break bread. Eat with people. Eat with people. You say you want to see people far from God come near him, you got to talk to them first. We have to engage. We have to invite. We have to go out into that really scary world. And listen, I've brought my kids to people's houses. I've gone to people's homes and they swear. My kids, we leave, my kids are like, Dad, this so-and-so said, beep, what does that mean? And I'm like, it means this, child. Or there's like alcohol. You know, Daddy, what were they drinking? Oh, it was grapes, child. Leave me alone. It was Welch's, really old Welch's. That's all it was. Can I have some? No. But things like that happen. I've been at tables at people's houses, and they've brought up controversial issues that I did not agree with them on. But you know what? we can endure that for the sake of the gospel. So all I'm saying today for us, if you want to reach someone, if you want to reach people who are far from God, we are going to have to start talking to people who are far from God, befriending them, getting to know them. Eventually, we're going to have to invite them into our life, and we must go into theirs. That's the only way to go forward. We can't, as a church, keep on doing churchy activities, and it's just us and no one else. If we do that, it'll probably be easier, but no one will go with us to heaven. If we want people to know Jesus, we have to go to them. We must go into their world and be with them. We have to. If we just stay in our Christian corner, we're good for nobody. How did Jesus say it? You don't light a lamp and put it under a bushel. You light a lamp and put it on a stand. So it brings light to everybody in the house. Therefore, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Let us shine in the darkness. Let us go into the dark. Let us invite the darkness into our houses. Invite broken, crazy people into your house. That's a great advice, isn't it? They'll know where you live. Still do it. People know where I live, and it's not awesome sometimes. But it's good. And we got to do it, church. How do we bless our neighbors? We bless our neighbors by eating with them, by breaking bread with them. So, I want you to think this week. Now, I know we're in coronavirus. How can you break bread in coronavirus world? Backyard barbecues, distance easy. Two, here's one for you. Maybe you just make a meal and make it to your neighbor as a gift. It's a big deal. Christmas time, we make food for some of the people around our neighborhood, and they are always so thankful for the food we make them. There's ways to bless and to break bread, even in coronavirus times, okay? So, with that said, we're going to pray, and we're going to go home. Let's go ahead and pray together, everybody. Father in heaven, thank you for this day and for your word that is true. It is our heart to engage our city for your name's sake. And we don't know how to do it, Lord. How do we talk to people we don't know? How to relate with people who are far from you? We pray. We're learning to listen. And now we're called to eat with people, to break bread. Father, please bless the endeavors of each person in this place as we, in our own lives, attempt to open our hearts and open our lives and open our homes to people. We ask you to begin to do amazing works through these actions. Help us reach this city for your name. In Christ's name, we ask these things. Amen. Welcome back, everybody. Have a great Sunday. It's a great stinking day. God bless you guys.